encouraging interest in science and technology careers can seem boring and even inaccessible to some students. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we discuss a program meant to combat this very issue, a trunk. Well, to be more specific, it's a traveling trunk of African-American and Latino inventions. This exhibit showcases inventors who made a difference in a variety of fields. The show targets minority students who might not typically consider a career in what's called the STEM fields, that is, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Then, later in the hour, we'll hear about a collaboration between two Kansas City companies to create the area's largest solar panel, just in time for Earth Day. That's all ahead on Central Standard, but first, the news. Good morning, Kansas City. It was the black inventor Benjamin Banneker who said that the color of the skin is no way connected with the strength of the mind or intellectual powers. Our guest today says that message is not only timeless, but also portable. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. And joining us now is Carol Lamb, executive director of the Institute for Black Invention and Technology, and he's curator of a traveling exhibit of black and Latino inventors, which has made its way to Kansas City. Mr. Lamb, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, how did this traveling exhibit come about?
Well, 12 years ago, my wife and I took a train ride from Springfield, Massachusetts to Philadelphia. She had seen an advertisement in Black Enterprise about a black cultural affair that was going on at a convention center there. When we got there, there were many different venues, one of which was a traveling museum that had come from Los Angeles, and it was about black inventors. Now, my wife and I figured we knew a fair amount of black history, but neither one of us knew much or, if anything, about black inventors. And my wife, whose field is early childhood education, said, "I would love to do this for the kids." And I said, "Well, why not do it for everybody?" And from that point on, we started to put together our own traveling museum.
Was there anything in the exhibit that inspired you that you saw that you wanted to incorporate into your new exhibit?
Not in particular. One thing we noticed was that many things that were exhibited were not necessarily what the inventor had invented. They were something that they maybe had just picked up at the store that was, I guess, a representative model, but not the real thing.
What's an example?
An example of that might be a fire extinguisher. And I've seen this more than once where there is a modern-day fire extinguisher as opposed to one that may have been invented back in the 1800s.
So tell us about the concept of a traveling trunk.
Well, the trunk, which is the smaller of our exhibits, the big one is called the Black Inventors Showcase, which has over 100 inventors in it. This one, the traveling trunk, is specifically put together for public schools. It has to be portable, and it should be able to be done within a classroom period. Otherwise, you begin to disrupt the school day. So our presentation is roughly 50 minutes.
And how do you present the material?
I present it in a dialogue. I get into a dialogue with the kids in the class. We start out by making certain we're all on the same page with regard to what is an invention, what's an innovation, what's a patent, how old do you have to be to get a patent, and very importantly, I ask them, do you know of any black inventors?
And what do they usually say?
Madam C.J. Walker and George Washington Carver, and that's usually is about as far as it goes.
So pressing combs and peanuts and That's about it.
That's about it.
Are you surprised by that, or do you feel like that's the point of why you're there?
I believe that's the point of why I'm there, because I know it's not taught in the schools, and I know most of the teachers don't know who Black inventors are. They are as surprised as the kids when I go through the presentation and talk about the start of rice culture in this country up through cellular communications.
So talk about that sort of trajectory of inventions from rice to cellular communications. You take it all the way through historically. Tell us how that shapes out.
Yeah, I like for it to be a chronological presentation. To me, it makes more sense. People have asked me, why don't you group things by type, like transportation, thus and thus forth? But it's hard to get everything that you might like in a specific group. So we do it chronologically. And so we go from rice culture to the sugar refining process, which was formulated by a guy named Norbert Rollot from New Orleans. He got two patents for his sugar refining process in the 1840s, and we use that same process today. And we go to a guy named Temple, Lewis Temple. He invented the Temple Targhee harpoon, which revolutionized the whaling industry. Then we talk about Jan Metzeliger, who invented the shoe-lasting machine. And then there's Dennis Weatherby. He's the man who invented the formula for liquid lemon-scented Cascade dish detergent. And then there's Mark Dean, who did a lot of the basic work on computers. He has something like 9 patents in the computer industry. He's a senior vice president at IBM and has been there for many years.
Now, that dish detergent inventor wanted to be an athlete first.
Yeah. Yeah,
tell us about how that story shaped out.
Well, he wanted to be a professional football player. His dream was to become a part of the NFL. When he went to college, and he went to a historically Black college, he went to Central State in Ohio, some of his professors said, Dennis Weatherby, they said, you know, you may not make it as a professional player. Not everybody who wants to be a professional athlete can make it in that field. You need a plan B. So his plan B was to become a chemist. He got a bachelor and master's degree in chemistry, and Procter & Gamble hired him. And at first they put him to work on the dry version of Cascade detergent. And then they came along and said, you know, Dennis, you did a great job on that. We want to come out with a new detergent. And it has to be a super cleaning product. It has to look different and smell different. It's really got to be something that moves off the supermarket shelves. Dennis is the guy who invented the formula for liquid lemon Cascade.
What makes you want to focus on the process inventions as opposed to the big inventions?
Well, that's what the inventors have worked on. They have not done big things. Fortunately, the ones that I have seen have done things that can be presented on a tabletop,
which
makes it portable.
the dish soap and the golf tee, for instance.
Yeah, the golf tee.
Tell us about the golf tee.
The golf tee is very interesting. The golf tee was invented by a guy named George Franklin Grant. I should say Dr. George Franklin Grant, because he graduated from Harvard's dental school. And they are very proud of that. When I talked to them about it, they said, oh, yes, we can send you a picture and tell you all about him. He loved golf. He would play golf in the Boston area as often as he could. He had one problem with the game, though. The problem was, in order to tee the ball off, in those days, we're talking about in the 1890s, you had to take wet sand and pinch it into a mound and then put the golf ball on top of that and then tee off. He got very tired of that, so he invented and patented the golf tee, same tee that we use today. He never sold it. He just gave it away to people he knew who liked to play golf.
Now, talk about that. Some of these inventions weren't patented, and some of these inventors don't get the historic credit because of the patenting process. They gave their inventions away.
That is somewhat true. Even though they didn't patent them, they are recognized as being the person who did it. For example, Lewis Temple and his harpoon. He is considered the man who invented that toggle harpoon, which revolutionized the industry, even though he didn't patent it. The lady, whose name I can't recall right now, who invented the clothes wringer, she invented the clothes wringer, but she didn't patent it. And what she said was, "I didn't patent it because I am a black woman. And if white women knew that a black woman invented it, they wouldn't buy it. And that's the only reason why I didn't do it." And she sold her idea for a paltry $16 to a white salesman.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Carol Lamb, Executive Director of the Institute for Black Invention and Technology, who is curating a traveling exhibit of Black and Latino inventions, which has made its way to Kansas City. Why do you believe it's important, Mr. Lamb, to highlight the achievements of Black and Latino inventors?
Because most of us, including blacks, don't know about our historic contributions of technology to America's growth. It's not generally known. It's not taught in schools. You have to look hard in textbooks or books about technology to find about what we've done. So that creates a tremendous gap. We tend to focus on what I call our social history, all of our struggles, and we overlook these people who have made great contributions regardless of slavery, Jim Crow laws, discrimination, and the feeling that the man won't let us do. You look at these inventors and look at the times that they've come through and what they've done, regardless of what of the obstacles they were able to achieve. And that's something that I try to get across to the kids. You can achieve also. And so we talk to them about some young people who have invented things, and they are in our exhibit.
What Latino inventions have you discovered that are in the traveling exhibit?
Well, the Latino inventions are kind of scarce right now. The primary reason is most of Latino inventions I've come across have dealt with process, and it's hard to display a process. You know, I need something that I can show. One person that I show is the founder of Goya Foods. His family has owned Goya Foods for four generations. They have 1,500 products on the supermarket shelves. They have 3,400 employees, and it's a great, still growing organization.
What was unique about the process that Goya uses?
Well, the founder, Prudencio, I can never pronounce his last name, but he made it a point to include his family in the business. Every time someone went to college, graduated from college, they were brought into the business, and that's how they've been able to maintain it and to make it grow. They believe in education, and they believe in involving the family.
And they make some very good yellow rice and juice as well.
They make a lot of good stuff.
Now, you're working with KC STEM. How does that relationship work?
So far, it's working fine. They identify the schools where they want me to go, and I contact the schools, and we go over the logistics, and then I show up.
And tell us what STEM is. Remind us what STEM is.
Okay, to the best of my ability, it's KC STEM Alliance. And they are focused on getting students involved in learning about STEM classes, science, technology, engineering, and math, trying to make it real for them, something that they can pursue. And so our goals kind of mesh. We want to do the same thing.
This STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, you feel like a lot of minority students have gotten away from going into those subjects?
A lot of minority students have never gone into those subjects. They, I guess you could say they shied away. They are somewhat fearful of it. It's so technical. It's so hard. But if they work at it and take time to get the proper foundation, they can do it. And there are plenty of examples out there.
Tell us what you think of our students that you've interacted with so far here in Kansas City.
I think it's been fun. They've been very attentive. They've wanted to know more. How can I get a patent? It's just amazing. They've been very, very open and welcoming.
Do you tailor your presentations in a way that keep kids' attention spans? Are you learning as you go?
Yeah, I do. One thing to do is to ask them questions so that they can participate. You don't want to just talk at them. You want them involved. And sometimes I will ask them simple things like, do you know what this is? I have with me a very interesting ironing board. It's about a foot and a half long. And it's very narrow, and I hold it up, and I say, what do you think this is? And 9 times out of 10, and this is wherever I go, somebody will say, well, it looks like a duck.
ironing board that looks like a duck.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not a duck, and I explain to them what it is and how it was used. And they say, oh, I see, but it's...
What are the reactions that some of the children tend to foster the most? What are the questions that they ask the most?
Oh, boy. It's hard to say. Which ones do they ask the most?
What questions do you hear the most from children, other than about patents?
I don't know if there are any specific. They're kind of all over the board.
Well, which ones do you hear?
Which ones do I hear? Oh, boy. Where did you get all this stuff from?
And where did you get all this stuff from?
Well, my wife and I have spent a lot of time in antique shops looking for the older things. Believe it or not, I get some things from eBay. I have some slave shackles, for example, that came from eBay.
Wow, from eBay.
From eBay. I was able to pick up a, Newton PDA, Personal Digital Assistant, from eBay, which is the first handheld computer.
Came out from Apple, and it is a black inventor credited with...
Yeah, lady named Donna August. Donna August headed the department and was a key... participant in the whole technological development process. She has the patent for it, and she left Apple. She and a friend from Apple founded a software company in Boulder, Colorado, which they were able to sell. And I told the kids this, and they say, "Really?" They sold this company for $147 million cash. Which means they didn't have to wait for payments.
No, they didn't. Do you get a sense that students are more excited about people who aren't athletes and entertainers when your presentation concludes?
Yeah, because they didn't know. They didn't know what some of these things were. They didn't know the things that they use every day. There are things that they could do. For example, I know we're running short on time, but there's a young man named Adrian Lindsay from Akron, Ohio. He had a problem. He loved basketball. He would ride to the park on a bike with his basketball under an arm, and he would inevitably drop the ball. He went home and complained to his mother, "Mom, I'm always dropping my basketball." And she said, "Well, don't tell me your problem. Solve it." And so he sat down and invented what he calls an all-sack net. It's a basketball carry bag that looks like a basketball net. And it's also suitable for soccer balls. And, you know, you just sling it over your shoulder, and it doesn't get away from you. So that's a simple idea, but he did it. He sat down and thought about it.
So necessity is literally the mother of
invention. Oh, yes.
And when he went home and complained to his mother, she said, invent something.
Invent something. Yep.
What's your advice for young men and women of color who don't think they can pursue a career in technology or haven't thought about it?
Try it. You might like it. It's fascinating. And you can do so much more with it. Your future can really be in science, technology, engineering, and math. Your chances are greater for success in those areas than trying to become a pro ball player or an entertainer.
The flip side of that is, what advice would you give to businesses or academic institutions that are looking to get viable, smart, talented minority candidates in those fields?
Make the fields more friendly. Mentor kids. Don't make it to be the educational bogeyman that it becomes. Put the resources there. Kids need the resources to work with, to get their hands on. So don't shy away from that. Don't think that cutting out this program, that program, and the others, making the education process more efficient. Education, I don't think, was ever intended to be efficient. It's a learning process. It gets messy. And part of that mess has to be an investment in the system and in the kids.
What is the biggest educational boogeyman, as you said, in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics that need to be overcome by all parties?
Letting people know what they can become. Black kids in particular don't think of becoming something in science and technology, engineering, and math. It just doesn't occur to them because the role models are not evident. Some of the people who've succeeded, some of the black people who have succeeded, need to be out more. There are some who make it a point to go out and be in the communities and talk to kids. They visit schools, and more need to do that.
Mr. Lamb, what is your greatest hope for this traveling exhibit of Black and Latino inventors?
That the people that matter, the people with the money, will fund our exhibits in schools, community centers, and other places where we can have an impact on kids.
Who typically tends to sponsor your exhibits, bring you in? Who gives you invitations?
Mainly colleges and universities. That's for our larger exhibit. Public school systems are always short on funds. And so we certainly do that, but we don't do as much of it as we would like.
Our guest is Carol Lamb, Executive Director of the Institute for Black Invention and Technology. He's curating a traveling exhibit of Black and Latino inventors right out of his traveling trunk. And it's made its way to Kansas City. He's been making his way around different educational institutions here. You may see him. He'll be here through mid-May. Thank you for coming.
And then coming back.
Thank you for coming to the show today.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, more talk about innovation as we look at solar energy projects taking root here in the metro. We'll be right back.